Future-proof gold from News Talk.
Now, lots of animals show unhappiness. Dogs whine, elephants mourn, monkeys can become depressed. But none of them cry actual tears like I do without question at the end of Elf when everyone starts singing Santa Claus is Coming to Town. What is the function of dehydrating from a gland near our eyeballs? And has it anything to do with onions? Michael Trimble joins us now. He's Emeritus Professor of Neuropsychiatry at the National Hospital in London and author of Why Humans Like to Cry. Welcome to the programme, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Jonathan. How are you?
So there's sort of a couple of people texting saying, you know, other animals cry. We are the only ones that cry tears down our faces. Is that correct?
Yes, I think it's important to make this statement at the very beginning that nobody, certainly myself, is not suggesting that other animals have emotions, that animals in the evolutionary tree approaching us, particularly mammals, the higher mammals and the primates, have emotions that may well be very similar to ours. However, they will cry if you put something in their eye to irritate it, but we are the only species that a living species, that is, that cry emotionally with tears. So it's not saying that other animals don't have similar feelings or emotions, maybe, but it's the issue of crying tears, which is a specifically human trait.
Yeah, and it's not something specific to newborns, is it? I mean, babies that are just born, they cry, but no tears come out. Is that because that part of their body hasn't developed yet, or because they haven't got enough liquid and they need it, or why is that?
No, the original biological function of tears was to provide some moisture to keep the eye moist, but also tears generally have within them some antibiotic-like substances that cut down infections. So that was the original reason, I guess, why tears develop, to keep the eye moist. However, when a baby is born, it also has to keep the eye moist. So a very, very small child in the first few months of life will cry, will shout out, and can, of course, provoke tears if the eye is irritated. But they don't cry emotional tears in the same way that they do after perhaps 3 or 4 months. And it's at that point in time when one sees, in the human anyway, the development of emotionally related tears.
I have a five-year-old, and it seems emotionally related tears are pretty much what he does 50% of the time, usually for, you know, reasons that just don't make sense as an adult, and trying to unpack them is quite a job. This is something that certainly becomes a major part of childhood. When does it start happening? After a few months? And why then, do you think, and why does it continue until near adulthood?
Yes, it's about three to four months, perhaps a little bit before, perhaps a little bit after, when the emotional crying emerges as rather different from the sort of the shouting and screaming of I want. The relationship, it appears, I've not got personal experience, but when I've asked mothers about this, the relationship between the mother and the child appears to change quite dramatically when the child is expressing emotionally related tears, particularly to do with separation from the mother. So the early tears that emerge emotionally very often are interlinked with separation from the mother, and then the amelioration of the tears occurs when the mother comes to the child, picks the child up, and does a number of things which I might have time to talk about later, but part of it is to do with the singing of lullabies, and partly to do with engendering rhythms by moving the child gently. So those kind of needs seem to continue for quite some time during the development of the human infant.
Is that your own sort of hypothesis, or because you sort of, you know, I'm always, my ears always prick up when a scientist says, you know, I don't have experience of this myself, but it seems to me when you say, you know, these ideas that tears that come down our face are as a result of the mother-child relationship, or as a part of maybe a growing awareness of that, is there science to support that?
Well, the reason I say that is because I'm not a mother. But I do ask mothers about their interrelationship with their children. Right. And of course, what is happening, the tear at the point I was talking about, very, very early on in life, and this rebounds on your question, but very, very on in life, the tear becomes a signal, a highly important signal of the emotional state of the one who is crying. And this is very crucial. And that is responded to by, I'm talking here about the mother,
yeah.
who responds with what one refers to as empathy for the tears. So the tears are a signal, a highly important signal that the mother responds to. And then the child usually, hopefully, will stop crying, or crying will get much less.
Mm.
So there's something very important about the mother-infant relationship which leads not only to the crying to be relieved by the presence of the mother, but also one can assume, but nobody can ask a child directly because they haven't got a spoken language at that time, presumably with the presence of the mother and the lack of crying, their emotional state improves.
Okay.
And just to follow on, though, from that, generally, if you ask adults who cry, and of course they cry less as they get older, nevertheless, the majority of people say they feel better after crying emotionally.
Now, I thought that was because inside the tears there are some hormones, or there are, I mean, what is a tear made of? Do we know what the chemical composition of is it? And can we identify which each of those things do in the body?
Well, there's been a number of theories that the crying somehow gets rid of bad chemicals in the body, and therefore you feel better. I have to say that to me seems highly spurious and never been proven in any way. It is the case that if you induce tears with an onion, which you mentioned earlier on,
yeah.
if you induce tears with an onion, then the chemical composition of the tears seem to be different from the chemical composition of tears which are provoked emotionally. However, there's nothing specific in the tears that one can identify that isn't, if you like, a part and parcel of other secretions, nothing very, very specific. There are hormones in there, but they're normal bodily hormones.
But it would sort of expect, obviously we may not have the tools to properly identify all of the molecules and their function in the body in a tear just yet, but it would imply that if an onion cry makes you, has a different composition, that's a mechanical response of the body, if that has a different composition to sad tears, it would imply that there is something more going on in those tears.
Yes, I think that's correct. Some people have suggested, again, it's on rather slender evidence, but it's one which is a perfectly acceptable one, namely that pheromones are in the cries, in the tears. And the pheromones, you know, are substances that one smells and often have an erotic content. And it may well be that the tears have some emotional content that relates to pheromones. But that's been suggested, but it really hasn't been adequately experimented to say that's definite.
Do we know whether or not men cry more than women when they're younger, or women cry more than men when they're older?
Very interesting question. The gender gap, if I can put that in a slightly technical term, the difference between male and female frequency of crying and admission to crying, seems to be similar up until about puberty. Beyond puberty, females cry more than males, and that seems to be persistent throughout the rest of life. And
is it cross-cultural?
Pardon?
Is that cross-cultural?
Well, it's of interest that in the last 30 years, where people have done epidemiological investigations to look at these frequencies, there has really been no change. And in the last 30 years, of course, the social role and abilities and lifestyle of women has changed dramatically, as, of course, has that of men. But this gender gap does not appear to have decreased particularly, which one would think it would do if it was largely a cultural matter. Now, of course, it may well be cultural, and I think it's accepted that the further south you go in Europe towards the lower Mediterranean, the more likely it is that men will express that they cry.
Really?
But this gender gap still remains.
Well, I suppose, one, you know, with all of the various waves of new wave men, from, you know, sensitive to hipster to feminist, I suppose there is probably one thing that hasn't been tackled as a taboo, and that is men crying openly in public. I mean, I think it's often a talk show topic when someone accepts an Oscar or wins a football game and starts crying. For some reason, that's just too far for even the most sensitive of men to think that's okay in public. Love to get your thoughts on that. You can text us 53106 for 30 cent. But interesting that you think that that crying may have evolved or may have something to do with sound. And I guess people don't appreciate sound as much as one might if you worked in radio. And I always love when I'm talking to, if I'm giving a lecture about communication or talking to a group about sound, I always love the idea of playing a horror movie without sound and showing how completely useless it is. And then playing the sound of that horror movie scene and showing how people emotionally respond to it 50 times more. That sound is, it must be linked to our emotion.
Yes, of course, and it's linked to crying. So in the studies that we've carried out in a number of countries in the world where we've looked at the response of crying specifically to various art forms, it's music that wins every time. So how many people will admit to crying with music? It's somewhere like 80 or 90%. How many people will admit to crying to looking at a beautiful sculpture or to viewing a beautiful architectural building or even to viewing a painting? You're down much more to the 10%.
Hang on, movies must be higher than music, though.
Well, yes, but you just explained why.
Yeah, because it's both. Yeah.
There's no such thing as a silent movie. Well, of course, there might well have been in the past, but even the old silent movies had music.
Yeah.
And so yeah, when people say to me, oh, yes, but what about Titanic? What about Les Mis or something like that? Well, it's the music. I mean, the story, you have to have the narrative, and this brings you into another form of music where you have a narrative together with music, which is opera.
Yeah.
And opera, of course, is classically a setting where people cry. And it's acceptable, I think, for men to cry the opera. And in the movies.
Yeah, well, I cry and my wife has a series of videos of me bawling in tears, and I'm not afraid to say it, at movies that really shouldn't. I mean, Elf is one, when everyone starts singing Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and because they all have Christmas spirit, Santa's sleigh starts working again. That, to me, is just such a beautiful little idea, and it makes me cry every time. And I proper rolling down my cheek tears. It's ridiculous. And I think the music is absolutely it. But I think people probably don't think about that. But if I'm producing a piece of soundscape radio, I always think about, what is the music? How do I make people feel emotion? You know, people think about The Notebook, Marley and Me, all these movies that are particularly emotional. Without the music, you don't get half the bang for your buck if you're trying to get people to gush a bucket.
Yes, that's quite correct, and that just fits in with what I was saying about the importance of music. Now, I'd mentioned the importance of music because the baby's world, remember, in the first part of life, but also in the uterus, is one of sound.
Mm.
It's not one of sight. And so when the mother is coming to the child and the tears are beginning to come, what are they doing? They're classically singing lullabies. And lullabies are the basis of our great appreciation for music, and before language that I'm speaking now, where the baby will hear music and respond to music and be ameliorated by the music. So our need for music and our ability to respond emotionally to music begins extremely early on in our life.
Absolutely fascinating stuff. Thanks very much for joining us. That was Michael Trimble. He's from the National Hospital, Queen Square in London, author of Why Humans Like to Cry.